If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss. There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Drop your shoulders, take a breath, tune in to how you feel, because it's time to stretch. Hello and welcome back to a new season of Stretch Marks podcast. My name is Sinead O'Moore and I created Stretch Marks to give us all an opportunity to acknowledge the parts of life that are stretching us in all directions, not just the physical, but the mental, emotional, hormonal, professional, financial, identity, partnership, energetic stretches we all go through. Because there is no right or wrong, there is no picture perfect, there are just a series of stretches, one after the other, that leave their mark. This episode is sponsored by Carrywell, maternity wear that makes breastfeeding and pregnancy as comfortable as possible. Carrywell is the support we need with their maternity and nursing underwear, made specifically for our growing needs before, during and after pregnancy. Embrace the stretch of motherhood confidently with Carrywell and this podcast. Fertility is a very personal journey. Understandably so personal, it's often completely private. But that can leave us at risk of only hearing some commercial promises and the good news. So where is the messy middle? Claire Walsh is a successful author and TED talker. She is not shy to challenge or resilience, being the first person to represent Ireland at the Free Diving World Championships in 2019, and is one woman who certainly knows how important it is to take a breath. As she teaches and talks about breath and what it can do for our body and mind in sea and on land, she is strong and brave, and she is in the messy middle of subfertility. We talk about illusions being shattered, her relationship with hope, the indignity of the physical process, and the power games between you and an industry who hold the keys to life. This is a moving conversation with a woman who doesn't know how the story ends and who is being stretched between what could be and what this is. Claire Walsh, you are so welcome to the Stretch Marks podcast. Today's episode, this conversation, it's going to be very powerful because I've already seen the type of way that you have expressed what you're going through. I admire it. I respect it. I find it incredibly empowering and really dignified, but it is painful. And I want to share my gratitude to you for finding that courage to talk about your current stretch.
Thank you. Dignified is a really nice word. I take that as a huge, huge compliment. In fact, I'm going to pop it up on my notice board in front of me because I think there's so much about fertility, infertility that's so undignified. It's so raw. It's so visceral, whether that's physical elements or emotional elements. So to reach any sort of even illusion of dignity is absolutely a win.
Tell me, when did you start to acknowledge that your body wasn't aligning with your personal wishes?
Again, a really super way of putting it. I think probably just a little over a year ago. My experience is a good few people close to me have gone through journeys of IVF. They were younger than me when they started and they had quite long journeys. Let's see how many times I say the word journeys in this podcast. Yeah. If you're drinking tea, take a sip. So I think I was cognizant of what it requires, and you know, no woman who wants children gets to the age of 40 and thinks this is going to be a breeze. I was shocked if there are, you know, kind of it's so ingrained that we're running out of time. So I think I was really aware of that. I'd come off the back of a really busy period. I turned 40. I got married at a wedding and I just submitted my book. So it was chaotic. So, you know, in the background, we were trying and there was an element of, oh, it won't happen. And if it does, you're great. It's a blessing. And kind of when we came out of that a little bit, a couple of months later, you know, you're thinking, right, I'm going to be really proactive. I'm going to get ahead of this. And I'm going to start an appointment just to get the ball rolling, get things investigated. We may not even need it. I don't know how many times I said that. And I think within that, there's an element of, if I say that, I'll probably surprisingly get pregnant. You know, there's all these unconscious games you're playing with yourself. If I book an appointment with the fertility doctor, I'll probably end up getting pregnant just before it. You know, I don't know, for me anyway, I kept on thinking of scenarios like this.
Planning future things. It's like, oh, well, should I say yes to that event that's in 6 months? Because I probably, you know, I may not want to travel then because I'll be pregnant. I won't buy that now, actually, even though it's beautiful, because it won't fit me in a month.
And it's funny. So when we were starting this, we had my cousin's wedding was last September. So that was kind of, you know, 9 months away from it. And I kept on thinking, oh, gosh, I wonder, will I say, oh, no, I will. I'll say yes. And look, he'll understand if, you know, if I'm having a baby and I can't go. And then changed. OK, well, what will I wear? Because hopefully I'll be 6 months pregnant. And I found that day really hard. Mm-hmm. Nothing was different. So it is funny, the markers that kind of pop in through your calendar. Like, obviously it was a wonderful day and you know you're so happy for a young, excited couple. But obviously, like, I think a theme that's going to come up pretty often in this chat is a duality. And mm-hmm. coexistence of two very opposing emotions. So, for example, that day, I found it really charming how obviously happy and, oh, just so in a bubble happy this young couple was. And whilst myself and my husband were just over a year married and we're in the depths of something very real and very not shiny. Does that make sense? You know, so again, it's lots and lots of stark contrast and managing, like, you know, you can feel two very different things at one time. So there's lots of moments of that. But just like you said, you know, you're planning things. Do I buy things? Do I not? And it is mad how quickly a year passes and you're in the exact same position. Christmas was a hard one. Christmas was definitely a hard one.
And is that because of imagined?
Because of imagined, because Christmas is such a marker anyway, like obviously where it's placed in the calendar, you know, at the end of the year and reflection. And I like Christmas. I love Christmas. In fact, I love the traditions, the family element, the magic. You know, I definitely buy into it. And I think, you know, last year, so my husband is Muslim and didn't grow up with Christmas or any experience of it other than what he saw on TV. So last year I was explaining what Santa looks like. Now he finds this gas. He's like, so this guy that you don't know breaks into your house and leaves presents for you. And he can see you when you're sleeping.
And we love him for it, you know.
This is it. When you break it down and explain, you're going, yeah, no, I totally get how it sounds. So I'm trying to explain the non-tangible elements of Santa, the magic, the excitement, how still to this day at 41 years old, I never really sleep through the night on Christmas Eve. It's like historical excitement is still somewhere in my body. I think it is incredible. So, you know, explaining this to Boody last year in the hope that this year we would be doing it or doing it with a bump. So that marker I definitely found difficult. Yeah, that was hard.
And it's the passing of a calendar and a feeling of it's not 2023.
Exactly. And my birthday falls a couple of weeks before Christmas, mid-November. So it's marking of another age, which when you are going through fertility treatments, it's a really tough one. I found them really tough.
What led you to deciding now is the time that I need to get some help?
Well, yeah, so going back to that original appointment that I thought, well, look, sure, I'll just get the ball rolling. We probably won't need it. So, you know, that appointment passed and it was more of a general MOT, bloods and, you know, scans and things like that. And then it continued on for a month or so. And then, you know, there was kind of a sense of, well, there's no reason why this shouldn't be happening and not really sure. And so we were recommended to go to a doctor that specializes in fertility. And again, she was really thorough, which was incredible. So again, you're kind of, maybe one way to describe it is my foot was on both sides of the fence. I was tentatively exploring what fertility treatments might look like, but I still kind of thought deep down would happen itself on its own. So a couple of months into that, we were told maybe, given time constraints being my age, it's time to start IVF. And I kind of thought, well, surely we're not there yet. How about we wait another couple of months? And they said, well, look, I think you should probably get the ball rolling. And that was a really hard weekend, actually. I think it was the end of April, start of May last year. It's funny, there are markers throughout that I really remember. Excuse me, that weekend was a very difficult one. There's a strange sense of loss, or you're suddenly into a new world and you're rapidly learning this vocabulary and what the acronyms stand for, the financial minefield that it is. So you become fluent in this new language really, really quickly. And the fertility doctor we were seeing, I remember actually had a consultation with her yesterday, and I reminded her of this. We were talking about PGT, which I now cannot remember, pre-genetic testing, sorry, couldn't remember what it stood for. And we were talking about that, the benefits of it, you know, the pros and cons, the cost and all of this. And she just said, can I just say, I'm really sorry you have to know what that stands for and what it means. And it did stop me in my tracks. You don't realize how quickly you become enveloped by this world. You know, I had spreadsheets and I had the costings from different clinics in Ireland, and then where we could travel to do it, and the costings for there, and the pros and cons. So, you know, I was quite methodical about it because I was afraid of the emotional element. So to focus on the practical was probably easier. So that was probably May. And then things just went a little bit arseways. They found some cells that had to be looked into. You know, you get all these checks before you go ahead with any treatment. And my checks threw up some cells that had to be removed and various other things. So it just seemed there was a lot happening gynecologically, which was just so full on. Yeah, it was really, really full on. So we started our first cycle, I think, the end of July, start of August. And then shit got real.
And then shit got real. And this is specifically why I wanted to talk to you now. I've talked about fertility and IVF in various ways in the last few years, either on Every Mum or on Stretch Marks podcast. Mm. But in the terms of retrospectively.
Yeah.
And that retrospection comes also with the minimization of some of the symptoms, A, because of time and time passing. And we are as humans good at forgetting, minimizing. Yeah. Again, that memory of some of the things that are quite distressing in our life, especially if the goal was achieved.
Exactly. Exactly. And I also am going to add in there, I think also because of trauma, certainly in my experience, there were, and obviously this is not carte blanche, this is not carrying everything in the same bush. This was my experience. However, since sharing my experience, I'm learning that it's not that unusual, which I think is the unfortunate thing. So there's definitely some elements that maybe in years' time I'll forget. I kind of hope I do. And because you're in it and you're moving so quickly, so there isn't time to go, this is fucked. For want of a better word, this is absolutely fucked, this situation that we're in. But you're moving so quickly. You're making decisions. You're also physically, mentally compromised. So everything is, it takes on a kind of blur, dreamlike quality. It did for me anyway. And my experience of IVF before, say, any of my friends did it, you know, it's people who will talk about it. There's no detail, which obviously everyone's entitled to privacy, but it's spoken about with a baby safely in their arms. So the perception of IVF is that it's a silver bullet for couples struggling to conceive naturally. I presume there's a better phrase for naturally nowadays, but without assistance. And that is just so absolutely not the case. And I think the difficulty in believing that is what gets parroted back to you when you're in the thick of it. Through pure ignorance, it might be the best of intentions, but pure ignorance. And that was one of the main one of the reasons for me speaking about it. The things people were saying to me, I am quite open. I tend to share, certainly with my family and friends, saying, look, we're doing this. But the things that people were saying were absolutely devastating. And, you know, I can't emphasize enough, it was done with good intention. But for example, someone said to me, you know, how many rounds have you done? And at that point, I think we did three. She goes, oh, sure, you're going to have to do loads more before it. Look, now, my friend's friends, her daughter, she did seven and she's a baby. So just keep going, keep the head down. And like, I really appreciate the good wishes, the desire that person had for me for a positive outcome. But what they're not aware of is what they're asking of me. Mm-hmm. So let's take a person who's done three. And if for some bizarre reason there was a guarantee you'd get it by seven. So to do another four, firstly, you're talking about nearly maybe 20 grand. Mm-hmm. Very first thing. Something that's very easy to measure is money. And the less easy things, the things that aren't as tangible, are the mental and emotional toll. I was destroyed after three. The toll was taking on my sense of self, my ability to emotionally regulate, my ability to work, my partner, our stress levels, our nervous systems, how we were in a relationship, how we interacted with the world, and so on. So saying repeat that another four times, I was kind of, I don't think I can. So it comes down. Yeah, exactly. And it comes down to this thing of, is it because I'm not resilient enough? So all these internal, you know, internal dialogues are happening. And I did, I shared a video on it, you know, likening, let's do another round, as you know, likening it to buying another round of drinks at the bar. Mm. Not the same. Mm. And again, it's this idea of that IVF is a silver bullet. And, you know, because I feel historically people only speak about if they've been successful, and some of the more humbling details get glossed over for good reason. And you know, obviously we can never fully understand something unless we've gone through it to some extent. But actually the dialogue around it, I found to be quite destructive. I understood it was well-meaning, but it was destructive for me.
You said then the treatment started and shit got real.
Hmm.
What does that look like at a very real personal experience. Like, what was happening to you physically, emotionally, hormonally, mentally? How did it shift, Claire, from a, you know, month before to now? This is my present lived reality.
I think August was probably fine. I was taking medication in the lead up to stimulation medication. So the typically what I would have thought of as IVF medications is the injections. So it's the lead up. So it is estrogen. So that was kind of, it's funny, it made my stomach really, really sick. So I couldn't eat much. I found I just wanted to eat plain toast or digestive biscuits. So something really plain and that I could chew. And, you know, you're queasy in the morning, there's lack of, there's tiredness. And then you realize this is fucking mimicking at the first, like what I would, my concept of morning sickness. How cruel is this? So the minute that clicks in your brain, you're going, this is just so shit. You know, there's just such a cruel irony to it. But, you know, you're still hopeful. I was worried about the injections. I have fainted at the prospect of needles before. So Boody did the first one for me, and the second one has to be done around the same time, the next day. And I deliberately said, will you go into the office tomorrow? It means he'll be gone at that time and I will have to do it myself. So I did a kind of a Braveheart-esque warrior cry, and I just stabbed myself in the abdomen. You actually don't have to do that. So, you know, it was just get this over and done with, and then it's totally fine. So it was a pleasant surprise in that.
The injection. Ceremonial in a way as well, though.
Wow, it just was similar.
You know, yeah. That fierceness out of you that, like, why do I have to do this to my body?
Yeah, summoning my inner queen Maeve.
Going just into battle with this thing now.
Absolutely. So, you know, the injections are a pleasant surprise. They're not nice, but they weren't as big a deal. Then the clinic we were at attending has recently been in the news, or there was an article released about it. All the information in the article predates our time there. However, we didn't have a very positive experience. Okay. So you're on your stimulation drugs, which is an injection in the evening, and then day 5, 7, depending on their protocol, you get called in for a scan. So they're seeing, you know, what's growing in your follicles and stuff. Nothing was happening. Nothing was happening. And, you know, you're told this with your legs in stirrups. You're trying to decipher shapes on the screen. I didn't know what a follicle looked like before then. And a doctor tells you this whilst, you know, essentially addressing your vulva. And it was a really dehumanizing experience. From that point on, I got Boody to come with me to come into that scan, and if any information was given to me, that they asked to wait until I sit up. It's very hard to take in information with a probe inside you, and it just becomes really, it's really vulnerable. I would consider.
Well, I'm thinking I haven't gone through this experience, okay, but I have gone through other medical experiences, and that is not what happens. You are examined, and there is then that, you know, look, and nobody likes kind of physical examinations of any sort, okay? But you are examined, you redress, you sit back at the desk, and a conversation begins. That is a respectful way and a secure way of saying, you know, come back into yourself, come back in, you know, and the relationship moves forward. Is that knowing what you know by talking to other people, is that regular that's what happened?
I don't think so, to be honest. And I spoke to a doctor about this kind of around Christmas, and they kind of went, oh, that's like bedside manner 101.
Yeah.
Well, you don't do it. However, they did say sometimes, you know, they're processing information, they're planning protocol. So this person said, sometimes I find myself starting to say something. 9 times out of 10, I will catch myself and go, do you know what? Sit up, get dressed, come in and we'll have a chat.
Yeah.
They said, look, sometimes I forget. But in my experience with that doctor, that happened more times than not. And a really big part of IVF, fertility, that made me want to speak about it was the voice of the woman in the whole process. And that was the reason, if people follow me on Instagram, Claire Walsh Live, they'll have seen that I did share that article that came out. And the reason is to name and isn't actually to name and shame the clinic, because it does predate me. But I did want to speak about, I did want to name something that I felt during the process. And that is really vulnerable and slightly gagged.
Mm.
You're with a clinic, and I don't for a minute think that the clinic I was with is the only clinic that, you know, does this or has done this. And they're, you know, I'm asking questions. I'm paying a lot of money. I'm asking questions. There are definitely gaps in what I'm being told. I've kind of promised myself I wouldn't, you know, consult Dr. Google. Mm-hmm. But I found myself having to do that to get relevant information. So it was all really patchy. So that in normal time, Claire, is fine. I can handle that and I can advocate and be polite and ask for what I need. In Claire that has been on some form of hormones, Claire that is about to start a fertility treatment that she's already nervous about, everything gets heightened. And we found ourselves asking questions and having them answered, having them not answered, getting quite a high level of defensiveness that we felt was disproportionate to what we were asking. And then this kind of continued, and it became, and I really dislike the overuse of the word gaslighting, but in its truest definition, I felt like we were being gaslighted.
Mm.
And suddenly you find yourself in a position where you're going, we've just paid $6,000. We've already spent $4,000 doing tests.
Mm-hmm.
These people are going to be responsible for the doctors I see. These doctors are going to be doing internal scans. They're going to be answering my questions, not answering them. They're going to be hopefully getting my eggs. They're going to be creating my app. And suddenly I just felt so trapped. I remember saying to my sister, who I worked in hospitality for years and years and years, I said, what's the IVF equivalent of spitting in my food? I feel like they're going to do that. So suddenly I found myself not being able to question, you know, biting back.
It doesn't take much to be a difficult woman.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I have no doubt they mark your file. Maybe that's completely wrong. But you're worried that they are. You're marked as difficult. And then suddenly I find myself going, just be nice to them, Claire. Don't challenge them. Just take your injections. And then I hear that dialogue and go, who the fuck is that girl? That's not me. It's a really weird, it's a really disconcerting position to be in. So essentially you are so vulnerable. They have so much power. And not only that, you are paying so much for the privilege.
And the consequence. The consequence is life-changing.
Yep. Do I get to be a parent or not?
Yeah.
It's a pretty big two roads diverge in the yellow wood. I do need to caveat a lot of this with our experience wasn't all bad. And we did have a consultant who I feel genuinely cared and was invested in me. So this isn't I'm not pregnant at the end of it, so fuck the clinic and, you know, throw a match onto it. I started talking about this before I kind of knew the outcome. And that's why I shared it, because there is something about the woman's voice in it of not really being able to speak freely of worry of being judged or reprimanded or treated differently when you're already so vulnerable. And I think that's the piece that's important that I want to know more about. I want to research more about vulnerable client, great and powerful Oz, and a lot of money in the middle of that relationship.
What I would say to you is that, take the money aside, perhaps, well, for sure. It is not uncommon to also hear this relationship dynamic in pregnancy, in experiences of traumatic birth, in experiences of traumatic postpartums, especially around conversations of, you know, breastfeeding, you know, just this power dynamic, this vulnerability and this power dynamic, and a feeling of being gagged and silenced and being the good girl in the room, instead of being like, this is happening to my body.
And it's funny, so the bit after our IVF treatment, I didn't respond and I still didn't respond. But then the abnormal happening was that I experienced a lot of side effects from the drugs after the fact. So essentially I started hemorrhaging. I was bleeding for 2.5 months. It wasn't a period. It was leaving me woozy. It was very painful. It's destroyed more towels and sheets than I can possibly explain. It was really mad. And I remember just saying, there's no way they would let a man bleed for 10 weeks and go, I don't know, breakthrough bleeding. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's the equivalent of, it's a virus. I'm like, what exactly is breakthrough bleeding and why is it happening? And what are we doing about it? And what does, you know, all this kind of thing. There were so many elements where I go, this isn't right, but I don't have the knowledge. I don't have the expertise to know where to look. So I'm just going to start. And yesterday or the day before, I had a conversation with a healthcare professional and we spoke about IVF, the industry. And I learned, they're probably not shocking facts, to be honest with you, but, you know, the industry side, the business side, and that side of behind the scenes. And I just found tears streaming down my cheeks, not for me, but for the hundreds, no, I'm talking about hundreds of messages in my inbox on Instagram from women who put their savings, their marriage, their body, their well-being into their baby project. Some of them walked away with a baby, but a shitload of trauma. Some of them walked away going, enough, I need to put me first. Some of them walked away without their marriage intact. Some of them walked away in shit tons of debt. And just, you know, obviously industries and business and money. But what that means to the people involved, the patients, the clients, it is life changing stuff. It was really, really devastating.
What were some of those truths that broke you?
Suppose the, you know, a business's role, function is just to make money. And I think when I'm entering into something, I have to make a decision not to be cynical, because you can view everything through that lens. So being, you know, we are still on our journey.
Drink.
We're in between drink and take a sip. We're still, you know, in between clinics, and I'm going to find it far harder to be not cynical, you know, recommending a treatment that costs 10,000 euro or I think you're going to need whatever. You're kind of going, do I actually need it? Or are you trying to make a target?
Yeah.
And the truth is in between, and I 100% not saying that all doctors are money grabbing, whatever. But I do think the umbrella aspect of it, it is an industry. It is a business.
I want to thank Carriwell for recognising how important support is to mothers and for providing that support in all shapes and sizes, even podcasts. Their pregnancy and postpartum range is all about comfort, functionality and support. It's not just about clothing. It's like this ongoing experience of well-being that sticks with you from pregnancy all the way through nursing. What is even more impressive is their commitment to the environment. Carriwell has taken significant strides to increase their eco-credentials by incorporating recycled materials into their collection. So not only are you empowered when expecting, feeding and reclaiming your body, but you're also contributing to a more sustainable and eco-friendly approach to motherhood. Embrace the stretch of motherhood confidently with Carriwell, available to buy now on cleverclogs.ie or check out your nearest stockist.
And an industry, so going back to what you said about there's no way we would live in a world where men were just able to bleed for weeks on end and kind of dismissed and said, well, look, that's just one of the things. That's just part of it.
Not sure, look, you know. Yeah.
Sure, you're built to bleed, aren't you? You'd be fine. But I get a sense, and again, I'm not isolating reproductive treatment. Fertility treatment. I'm isolating women's health as an entire sector. After years of these conversations and my own personal experiences, where it can be commoditized, there is great attention to detail and motivation and investment and studies and research and growth. It is a corporate game. How can industries literally be birthed because of what it is that we are physically enabled to do, with very little matched when it comes to the female experience? How can we go through this and minimize your pain? How can we go through this and minimize your side effects? How can women go through pregnancy and morning sickness and be minimized of those experiences? These are things that are not new. They are literally since the dawn of time. And yet we have rockets trying to reach Mars and nobody with power and money willing to really understand how women can experience life and what we can do here in as minimally distressing a way as possible.
You hit the nail on the head. And we're going through these different experiences, whether that's childbirth, pregnancy loss, fertility struggles.
Cervical cancer.
Yeah, like that's even going, you know, there's so much, and there's so much I don't know about. And it's an area, like I said, well, certainly in the fertility aspect that I'm new to. And I'm finding myself looking up more, having the conversations. I don't want to come up across, because I'm not a conspiracy theorist, or you know, that they're all out to get us, they just want to make money. I don't think that's the case, but I think there's an element, and I think that there is an imbalance of power, and ultimately it is to make money. And the problem is those patients, clients, and people trying to conceive are really vulnerable. So again, that power dynamic, it's so imbalanced, and the fallout from that, I think, can be huge on a person's life. It's not something, oh sure, look, I know that was a rough time, and you forget it. It's changed. I think it's, well, maybe it's because I am in the thick of it at the moment, but I think it has changed a fundamental part of me, or what I think about myself or my relationship with myself. That's going to take a lot longer than a few months to repair, to renegotiate, maybe is a better word. So don't know what else to say on that.
Tell me about your relationship with hope, because that goes on a journey too.
I wrote a post about this. I find hope to be the most intimate part of all of this. And someone close to me gave me a really good analogy that I'm going to absolutely butcher. So she said, when people tell you to be hopeful and you just need to have hope and you just need to believe in, you know, any sort of language around hope, she goes, I feel like my hope is a balloon and they're throwing it up in the air and they're batting it across my head. And I just want to say, stop, put it down. You're going to burst it. So what I took from that is hope so fragile. It's so precious. It's so personal. I don't feel comfortable explaining or handing it over to someone or someone else being glib about it, but saying you just need to have hope. So I don't think that it answers your question, but I think maybe it gives you the context of how I feel about that word. I've definitely been accused of being negative or pre-grieving or, you know, not having hope. But the reality is no one would do this just for the crack. No one will put themselves through this. So obviously I have hope, but that hope I share with my husband when his arm is safely around me and the lights are out and we can speak in that bubble of intimacy between a couple, you know, that freedom that maybe you wouldn't speak with in day to day. That's where hope belongs for me. I find it hard to let it pass the mouth. Because it feels fragile, because there are so many other external elements that are challenging that. And those elements are doctors telling you, you have 2-3%, whatever that is. You know, your medical results from your last 2-3 rounds that tell you that hasn't worked. It's not, you know, so there's so much that I feel can be damaged by hope. Actually, it's really funny. I've always kind of had this relationship with hope and pinned on my notice board. It's one of my favorite poems. Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all. So I nurture my hope, but I recognize that it can be pretty fragile. And certainly in the last couple of months, it has taken a battering. But I do love this Emily Dickinson poem, and it's certainly worth having a little read of for anyone who's kind of struggling with their relationship with hope and what that means to them.
Where are you at now?
Where am I at now? I am in the messy, messy middle. Actually, I don't think I'm at the middle. I think I'm kind of middling towards the end. It's a really messy place. It's a really messy place. We are in between treatments. I am feeling the emotional, mental knock-on effects quite a lot, quite keenly at the moment, more so than I did, you know, a month ago. But yeah, I'm really feeling it at the moment. And I think that's one of the reasons why I agreed to talk about it and indeed to do this podcast, because I think to hear someone talking from the messy middle is something that I would have benefited from. I don't know the outcome. I don't know if in a year's time I will either be pregnant or with a child or moving my life around, tweaking it to what I want to achieve or what I want it to look like. Both will be fine. All will be fine. I will be fine either way, but it is an awareness that this journey doesn't always lead to a happy ending. And again, I really appreciate messages of, oh, please God, this time next year, you'll have your little baby in your arms. I'm kind of going, I hope so too. There you go. Hope slips out. I hope that's the outcome too. But if it's not, I'm still Claire and I'm still whatever I believe about myself. And I'm going to work really hard at solidifying those things and not being a mother take away from that.
Does not define any of us.
No. No. It is a very, I think we are in a, and I was given a word by Helena Tuberty and now totally lost it, a mother-centric society.
And you need some support. Helena is wonderful.
She really, really, really is. I can't sing her praises enough. But we do, I think, consciously or unconsciously. I think mothers are heroes. I have two sisters. Both of them are mothers. And, you know, each child represented a really different stage for my sisters. And I think the strength and resilience women show is, it is otherworldly. It is of legends and goddesses, and it is, it's making the hair in the back of my neck stand up. It is quite astounding. I think to say that I would consider myself to be a lesser person because I'm not a mother, might be a little bit of a fib, but there's a bias in there. I don't have the words to articulate that properly yet. There would definitely be a fear. So in this messy stage that I'm in now, life is kind of paused, to be honest with you. I'm finding it difficult to concentrate on work. That tab open in the back of my brain drains so much battery. Even if I don't have doctor's appointments or I'm not actively doing something at the minute regarding fertility treatment, but it leaves no space for creativity. It takes a lot of energy, it takes a lot of patience. I wasn't given a lot of patience to begin with, so it's not super. It's a really, really, really messy stage. And it's like the worst January ever. It's really compounded by that. It's like an eternal January. It's really, really hard. So yeah, that's where I'm at. It's shite.
Everything is longer when you're waiting for an outcome.
Yeah. And like there is so much fear, and fear is a subject I'm really trying to explore at the moment. Everything has become so motivated by fear. I'm afraid it won't happen, or I'm afraid of things like really bizarre. So the storm on Sunday night, Isha, I lay in bed, I'm like, I'm really scared of the wind. That's not me. Mm-hmm. And I stopped and I wrote a little note in my journal beside my bed and kind of came back to it in the morning going, what is happening? What is being held so tightly that is now manifesting in being scared by wind? Mm. I think it does come back to fear, that of like, of uncertainty, of not knowing the outcome, of being afraid of a potential outcome or even the other potential outcome, what can go wrong, of being so consumed by all these things. And that's something that I would have been pretty good at managing before. And it just seems like all bets are off. Mm-hmm. At the moment.
I think it's often a consequence of physical vulnerability. Hmm. If you are vulnerable physically yes, we can put it into the tab folder of IVF reproduction, but your body knows, your body feels it. It doesn't say, oh yes, but not because of that, because of this.
Yeah. And obviously there's, you know, so much, and there's podcasts and so many resources on nervous system at the moment. Well, there always has been, but certainly I think there's a greater awareness of it. But that's exactly something that I've said, you know, fear, or whether that's lack of confidence, or, you know, however way it shows up for you, it doesn't just stay contained into, right, motherhood, will I be a parent? It dribbles into, maybe I'm not a great writer. Mm-hmm. Maybe that book was a fluke, or I shouldn't have been nominated for that award that I was really proud of 2 months ago. Now I'm second doubting it. Or maybe my friends don't, you know, it can get really, really ridiculous, but it does seep. It's quite insidious. And suddenly I find, you know, it kind of have these images of like vines slowly wrapping around like all the pillars in your life, all the things that you believe to be true about yourself, about other people. It's kind of thwarting it. So I think that is probably the biggest learning of fertility whilst I knew what the journeys looked like by proxy from having seen friends go through it. I had no clue at how it shakes the core of pretty much everything in your life. Everything.
I started this conversation by referencing how much I admired how you speak about this topic. I think if anybody has not witnessed that before, but has now listened to this podcast, understands fully what I mean. You mentioned just before I hit record something that was said to you, which helps guide how you choose to speak about it. Which was it about the scar or the wound?
Oh, yeah. Someone recommended, a very wise person, speak from the scar and not from the wound. And I went, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Like, wait till it's till the time has passed. And then I started posting stuff and I went, nah, fake it, speaking from the wound. And she just laughed. But I think there is a value to it. And like, I know today, I am not my most articulate words, just feel just a little bit beyond reach. And I'm also, I think, moving into a new stage of what I'm thinking about in terms of fertility at the moment. I'm really consumed about the industry and the injustice and the, you know, whatever inequality in it. So that is something that I'm still reading when I haven't fully formed my opinions or where to go with this. So my words aren't all that concise. But I do think that there is something about sharing, like that wound hasn't even had a chance to scab yet. And that is a really scary, really vulnerable place to be. And it can definitely play tricks with your mind. And a couple of months ago, I contacted Kathy Strict from Grief Ireland. And she was putting up stuff about, you know, what podcast would you like to see? And I said, have you anything on someone who is going through fertility or infertility, subfertility stuff? And she went, no, not, oh, shit. She goes, do you want to talk about it? Oh, shit. And it's exactly what I needed. Someone who is in that message, someone who hasn't packaged it neatly in their mind and have the really beautifully encapsulating words attached to it. I'm here. I'm grasping at words. I'm recognizing imagery that's coming to my head. And that's how I process. None of this is neat at the moment. None of it. I can say one thing one hour and totally contradict myself in the next hour, because it is oscillating between different feelings, different emotions. I'll finish on one thing. In a week in October, I shared content on my Instagram page solely around subfertility and the different elements of it. And one of them was all the feelings, all the emotions. And one woman said, I just found it really overwhelming and then sad. Then I was happy and then I was brave and then I was courageous. And, you know, she listed this thing and said, okay, and how did you feel the next minute? Like, it is so overwhelming. Like, roller coaster obviously is the cliche, but I don't even think that does it justice.
You say you're grasping at words and that you're not as eloquent as you may want to be right now. Claire, I need you to know that that is your body lying to you. Okay. Because everything that you have said is truthful. It is honest. It is courageous. And it is the messy middle. It is what is missing from the narrative. Mm. We cannot just have capitalist promises and perfect outcomes. That cannot be the thesaurus of fertility. We need so many voices, because even somebody else's messy middle is not the same as your messy middle.
And they can't be sanitized by live, love, laugh platitudes either. I met a person recently and they said, how are you doing? I said, fucking shit. Yeah. And she laughed. And I said, actually, I learned that from you. And I said, I remember asking before, how are you doing? And you said, I'm not doing great. Mm-hmm. I said, I really admired that about you. And that is something I've really appreciated, if someone has, I won't say strength, but the confidence maybe to hold space for you without trying to fix,
mm-hmm.
without trying to go, like, I understand hearing someone say, this is really hard. I feel heartbroken. I feel very disempowered. I'm worried my marriage is going to have, it's going to have knock-on effects on my relationship. I am, you know, if I loved someone and they told me that, I'd go into desperate fixer mode. I don't want my loved person to feel this way. Mm-hmm. So, like, what can we do? But actually, when you're on the other side of that, there's very little they can do. But I need you, I need them not to invalidate all these feelings. I'm a smart woman. I know I might feel differently tomorrow. I know that they are probably irrational. I know that they are caused by whatever, whatever, whatever. But in that moment, this is how things are. I just feel that rush to, again, I sanitize keeps coming back, just to make it neat and tidy. Oh, sure, look, please God, or you just have to be hopeful, or all these things. It just feels so dismissive. And that's, I think, why I'm almost aggressively honest. It doesn't mean that I'm not optimistic or hopeful somewhere, but everyone's really comfortable with that. So I tend to lean into the other side. That needs it.
I'm very comfortable with it too, and I champion it. We, as a beyond motherhood, we as women need to get really comfortable with expressing exactly what it is that we're feeling in every given moment, including this. Life is real. What happens to us is real. It is not to be minimized to save how other people need to feel. We are all living our very real, and this is why it was called stretch marks. Like, we are going through stretches at different stages and levels and capacities, and every single one of them leaves their mark on us. Mm. And this is a stretch for you. And when you're in it, have the permission to express it in whatever way feels true and safe for you. Mm. Because for some, being as open and honest as you are may not feel safe for them. That might be pushing them into a different level of nervous system discomfort. So don't go there. Tune into you. And what do you need from this moment? And live by that. Because otherwise, we are just setting ourselves up for a lifetime of illness if we just keep suppressing everything down.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think the other part of that is be brutal in protecting where you're at. My sister gave birth to my beautiful little nephew, Billy, a week ago today. And just, you know, a week before that, we were talking about protecting energy. And she's, my God, she's a giver and takes care of a lot of people, you know. So, you know, I said, you know, you have to be brutal, like the bubble, because this is a special time for you. It is stressful. It is exciting. And it's funny. I could almost imagine my husband kind of listening to me say this to her and going, oh yeah, that's her, you won't do it for yourself, will you? You know, I was well able to dole out that advice and believe in it vehemently. When it comes to me, you know, things slip through the cracks, but it is going, well, this is a vulnerable time, and spending energy outside yourself maybe isn't the best use of your energy at the moment. Mm-hmm. If you're home upset, if you are, you know, obviously this is going to vary from person to person, but it is having the confidence to pull up the drawbridge.
Mm-hmm.
That is not selfish, it is protective. Mm-hmm. Because actually what you're doing is a marathon, and it is a huge, huge event in your life, even if people don't see or recognize it.
There, you've done us a service.
Oh my goodness, thank you so much for having me on to chat.
I wish you love, and I wish you answers. I wish you clarity, and I wish you the team around you that, most importantly, you can trust.
Thank you very much.
The outcome is not ours to tell, but I wish you all of those things as you move away from the messy middle and into whatever life has in store next. But thank you, and keep talking.
Thank you. I will.
Claire, thank you for your courage and your dignity and the way you can express this personal experience. If you want to connect with Claire, you can find her on Instagram on @ClaireWalshLife. I'll also have a link in the show notes. And if this episode supported you, I would love to hear from you. I know it can be difficult to publicly share sometimes, but my DMs are always open. I believe in these conversations, and your actions make a huge difference. You have the power to help this show grow and reach new highs by sharing on your socials or in your WhatsApp groups and by hitting the subscribe button. Extra love, as always, for anyone who leaves an Apple or Spotify review. It all makes a huge difference. I'll talk to you again next week.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.